Welcome back to What's the Point of the Midrash, where we take a look at a rabbinic teaching and offer suggestions to answer the question, what's the point of the Midrash? My name is Rabbi Josh Uter, and today I need to begin with an apology because I made a little goof in last week's Midrash. As you may recall, the subject was regarding lying for peace, and the Midrash that I discussed was from a Gemara Bava Metzia 87a, and I made some comment about how the Midrash that I was dealing with went to the Gemara instead of from Midrash Rabbah, and I had mentioned that it actually did appear in Midrash Rabbah elsewhere, but not really on our Parsha. And I goofed because it absolutely does, that the Midrash that I had spoken about last week about God lying for the sake of peace does in fact appear in Midrash Rabbah on Parshat Vayera, in Parsha Memchet Seif Yudchet, chapter 48, paragraph 18. So my apologies for that mistake. I think the rest of the drasha still holds, but I try to be as accurate as possible here, so mea culpa for that error last week. I'd like to make it up to my listeners, however many you are in this relaunch, with a special bonus midrash this week. It's a bit of a short one, but you'll see in a second just why I thought it was very applicable for the theme of what's the point of the midrash, because sometimes the midrash actually tells you what the point is, or at least what a point is, even though there still may be a great deal more depth behind it. For a wonderful example of this, we have on this week's Parsha of Chayesara from Bereshit Rabbah 58:3, the following paragraph. Rabbi Akiva haya yoshev v'doresh, v'atzibor mitnamnem. Rabbi Akiva was sitting and lecturing, and the congregation, the community, was dozing and falling asleep. Bikesh la'oraran, he wanted to wake them up. Amar, and what did Rabbi Akiva do to wake up his congregation, the people who were dozing off in the middle of his lecture? Mahara ata Esther shetimloch al sheva ve'esrim umeya medina. How could it be that Esther came to rule over 127 countries, provinces, from the book of Esther? Ela tavo Esther shayeta bat bita shelasara shechayeta mea ve'esrim v'sheva v'timloch al mea ve'esrim medinot. It should be that Esther, a descendant of Sarah who lived to 127, should therefore rule over 127 provinces, states, what have you. In this midrash, you have Rabbi Akiva making an explicit connection between Queen Esther from Megillat Esther and Sarah, who passed away at the age of 127, sees 127 one place, 127 the other place. Sometimes when we ask what's the point of the Midrash, we try to say, well, maybe there was some exegetical ambiguity in the text that it's trying to resolve. Maybe there's a theological issue. Here, the Midrash tells us explicitly what the point of this Midrash was in a very direct, immediate way. The point of this Midrash was Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake up the congregation in front of him, so he threw something out. Now, this doesn't mean that there can't be some depth to it, that people could sit and understand, well, why was it Rabbi Akiva? Why specifically this analogy? For anyone interested, I'm not going to get into it now, but the Bein Porat Yosef, Rav Yaakov Yosef HaKohen, who is a student of the Hasidic master, the Baal Shem Tov, has an interesting take on this in the in his commentary on Chayesara and the Bein Porat Yosef. I'm not going to get into those details here, where he actually tries to delve into the details. But you can also see kind of from the point of Rabbi Akiva, when a great man gets up and says something that may seem a bit off, maybe, you know, you could argue that there is in fact some depth or deeper meaning here. Or maybe he threw something out just to get his students awake and thinking about what did he mean by this and what did he mean by that. Was this a serious drasha? Was it not? It's impossible for us to tell, but in the very basic pshat level, you can see, why did Rabbi Akiva give this teaching? His students were sleeping. wants to wake him up, throw something out. Can people spend time delving into the details in terms of trying to find some hidden meaning? Sure, go ahead. Perhaps that was even the whole point of Rabbi Akiva making this sort of drash, because when you have someone who is really well regarded and says something that may seem reasonable, may seem not reasonable, people are going to spend time trying to figure out what someone meant by that. I can even give an example from personal experience, not that I am in any way at the level of Rabbi Akiva. Many people who follow me, Twitter, social media, or know me personally, know that I like making bad jokes. Whole reason behind it, not for now, but I do. And I had this joke a while back that I put in social media that said, I support the use of medical marijuana, but only for chronic conditions. And this led to some really in-depth discussions in response of, was I talking about from a Jewish perspective? Was I talking about from a secular law perspective? What the difference was between a chronic condition versus some other painful issue, malady that someone might have? And I almost felt bad interjecting that this was a bad joke. Chronic, of course, being one of the synonyms or descriptors for euphemisms for pot, marijuana. Anyone who grew up in the 90s would know of Dr. Dre's seminal album, The Chronic. Why I, as a rabbi, have to explain this to people, beyond me, but apparently I did. So if people are going to take a stupid joke that I say seriously and may wake them up to a whole bunch of discussions, kal vachomer, logical inference, you're someone as great as Rabbi Akiva, you're going to say something that may seem a bit out there. People are going to wake up. People are going to take notice. People are going to engage with it. So that is a bonus midrash for this week for Chayei Sara. Now on to the main one. For today's main midrash, we actually go to the previous paragraph in Genesis Rabbah 58:2, riffing off of the verse "Vizarach Hashemush uvah Hashemesh" from Ecclesiastes 1:5. The sun rises and the sun goes down. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says, "V'chi ein anu yodein shezarach Hashemush uvah Hashemesh? Don't we know that the sun rises and the sun sets?" Ela ad shelo yashkia hakadosh baruch hu shimsho shel tzadik, hu mazriach shimsho shel tzadik chaveiro. Rather, it means when God, the Holy One, blessed be He, causes the sun of a righteous person to set, He causes the sun of His fellow to shine forth. Meaning in context, when one righteous person dies, another one is born sort of to take that person's place. And the Midrash gives several examples. When Rabbi Akiva died, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was born. When Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi died, Rav Ada Bar Ava was born. When Rav Ada Bar Ava was born, died, Rav Avin was born. When Rav Avin died, his son Rav Avin was born. And when that Rav Avin died, Abba Hoshaya from Trier was born. But it isn't all about one rabbi or great person, leader, dies and someone else is born. The Midrash continues that before the son of Moshe set, meaning before Moshe died, the son, again here referring to S-U-N, of Joshua, his replacement, rose. Meaning it's not just a matter of replacing when one person dies, someone else is born, but there are also examples here of someone else being groomed or there to take over as someone else is about to pass away. And the connection here to this week's Parsha has to do with the transition from one of the Jewish mothers of Sarah to Rivka, where Midrash concludes, Ad shelo hishkia kadosh baruch hu shimsha shel Sarah, shimsha shel Rivka batchila, that as the son of Sarah set in terms of her passing, the son of Rivka began, as it says in Genesis 22:20, Hine yaleda milka gam hi banim, v'acharkach ve'yu chaye sara me'ashana, where first it says, talks about the birth of Rivka, and then afterwards talks about the death of Sarah. For those interested, there are parallels to this Midrash in the Babylonian Talmud, one in Yoma 38b, cited in the name of Rav Yochanan, where it is said more explicitly that no righteous person departs from this world until another comparable person is created. Ein tzaddik niftar min ha'olam ad shenivra tzaddik kimoto. And in this regard, there is that replacement theory, not just as a leadership position, but also just in the world. And give some of the examples from the Midrash that I just cited. There's also a parallel in Kiddushin 72b about how when one great sage was dying, another was born, although gives slightly different names in terms of what how the transition goes, but whatever, the basic idea is still there, all on this pasuk from Kohelet, from Ecclesiastes, of Vizarach Hashem Ashuvah Hashemesh, that when the sun goes down, the sun goes up. When we think about the point of a midrash like this, I think for me, the most obvious idea that comes to mind is a degree of consolation regarding leadership and transitions. For anyone who has been part of a movement that has a very significant, important, influential leader, the loss of that person can be traumatic. Obviously, it depends on the nature of the organization, but even if you know you have many leaders, the loss of a single one who had a great deal of contributions can really feel like a loss to the community, and there is a gap that needs to be filled. And often we may feel like there's no one who could possibly replace such and such a person. This is especially true when dealing with the loss of notable great leaders. And the rabbinic tradition itself has different statements regarding the relative stature of leaders throughout the generations. We have conflicting statements within the Talmud about treating rabbis or sages or the great leaders of previous generations to current generations. In an idea that's called Yiridat HaDorot, that the generations are in decline, one rabbinic statement expressing this view we find in Shabbat 112b, Rav Zera citing Rav Abar Zimuna, that Im Rishonim Ben Melachim, Anu Bnei Anashim, Vim Rishonim Bnei Anashim, Anu Kachamorim. That if the early generations were the sons of angels, we are the sons of men. And if the earlier generations are the sons of men, we are like donkeys. And then continues, not even, you know, the good donkeys of Rav Chanina Ben Dosa or Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, but rather like regular other donkeys. On the other hand, we have a statement in Rosh Hashanah 25b that Yerubavel Bedoro, Moshe Bedoro, that Yerubavel in his generation was like Moshe in his generation, or Shmuel in his generation, Shmuel Yiftach Bedoro Kishmuel Bedoro, that Yiftach in his generation was like Shmuel in his generation, to teach you she'afilu kal shebekalin v'nitmana parnes aletzibor harehu ka'avir she'avirim, that even the lightest of the light, or the least distinguished person, once they've been appointed as a leader, should be treated like the greatest of the great. Of course, in this particular context, it means, well, the position of leadership should still be treated with respect, but following even the books of the prophets, when you compare Yiftach to Shmuel, Yiftach seems not to have been as great as Shmuel, despite having come in an earlier generation, which means, this is something my father likes to point out all the time, from the fact of that statement, it shows that the decline of generations, assuming it exists, is not necessarily linear. In either case, this idea of Vizarach Hashem Ashuvah Hashemesh, as in terms of this interpretation of one doesn't go down until someone else gets put up, I think provides a degree of reassurance against this idea of a decline of generations, in a sense putting faith in whoever you happen to have at the time or the moment, and not to feel that, oh, because we've lost so-and-so, all hope is lost and the future of Judaism and Torah and teaching is lost. You can still acknowledge that there has been a loss and a great significant loss, but nothing that is so fatal that Judaism as a whole will not be able to survive and adapt or find someone else who will be able to come and fill a role in a certain particular way. It does not diminish the contributions of the previous generations, but I think it provides a degree of comfort or minimize some degree of despair for any generation who lost a great leader who may have trouble finding someone who could replace, if not identically, that specific role or niche that someone had filled, but perhaps someone could contribute in other ways of equal and perhaps even greater significance. I had prepared to talk about this midrash a few weeks ago, but given the timing, it seems like a very important midrash to teach this week. The Jewish world lost one of its great leaders this past Motzei Shabbat on November 7th, 2020, with the passing of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, the former chief rabbi of England, who was only recently diagnosed with cancer. Rabbi Sacks was a very prolific author. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you may have seen his name or may have read one of his books or articles or come across someone quoting him, because he was also an incredibly eloquent person, very skilled at teaching complicated ideas to a mass audience who were educated but not necessarily literate in Jewish sources. And he could present these sources and these ideas in a way that was very amenable to a modern, well-educated audience, or at least an audience that was educated in the Western liberal tradition, had a great deal of influence among non-Jews, and very much so in among American Jewry as well, who were very receptive to a lot of his ideas and his writings. I'm not going to do a full eulogy of Rabbi Sacks. There are people who know him and his works much better than I do to provide that. But I can certainly see, given his range of influence and his contributions, people who may be thinking and wondering, who is the next Rabbi Sacks going to be? Obviously, no one will be able to be Rabbi Sacks himself. I'm not sure if anyone should try to be Rabbi Sacks or try to mimic him exactly. I'm not sure if Rabbi Sacks himself would want that based on what I've read of his writings. But in terms of filling that role in the world, of being able to communicate certain ideas and being able to have that wide range of audience and also that degree of respect while working in a very cutthroat world of religion and religious politics, maybe someone else will come along soon and fill that role or fill that gap. But the Midrash at least tells us that one sun does not go out without another sun already rising. So perhaps we won't have to wait too long to find someone else who may fill that gap and fill that gap in a different way. But I definitely think that this Midrash fits in very well with Rabbi Sacks's own teachings regarding hope and the future of the Jewish people. I don't believe he would ever think of himself as a sine qua non, as someone on whom the entire religion would depend. His contributions are certainly amazing and immense, and he will be missed. And I think the Midrashim that I taught today would fit in nicely with his thoughts about always thinking towards the future. And perhaps the next Rabbi Sacks is already with us. And hopefully it won't take too long before we see that person's light, whoever that may be. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful Shabbat.